The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, as many of you know, the last month or so I've been giving a series of talks on speech, mindful speech, wise speech, right speech. And last week I touched briefly on the role of silence. And so for today, I'd like to say some words about silence. And before I go on with that, I'd like to invite you all to reflect for a moment, what are the first associations you have with the idea of silence? What comes up for you when you hear that's going to be the topic or your relationship to silence? So just want to reflect on that, because what's interesting, I think, is how many different ways in which people relate to silence. And partly that's because I think silence is not a single thing. I think you could write a dictionary of all the different meanings of silence. It would be very rich. And so some people have very negative associations with silence. They've been silenced. Some people get silenced by our society and or by history or whatever. And so silence is a form of oppression that they feel. And other people feel that silence is really a positive thing. Some of the greatest feelings, emotions, spiritual experiences they've had happen in the context of some profound silence. So silence is very inspiring. When in years past, I've given a series of talks, three talks, where the last talk is on speech. The second talk is on listening, and the first talk is on solitude and silence, with the idea that the solitude, capacity, healthy capacity for solitude, lends itself or supports a healthy capacity to listen. And a healthy capacity to listen is a good foundation for speaking. And one of the places where I learned, first learned about the value of solitude and silence was when I was 20 or 21. I was living on a small dairy farm that had five cows. And the farmers I lived with, they went on vacation for a week and left me to care for their farm. And it was lovely. Take care of my five girlfriends. And it was quite a rural place. So for those, that week, I didn't see anyone except the mail carrier who'd come, I think, walking up or driving up that long road. In distance, I'd see the mail carrier. But otherwise, I didn't see anyone. And it wasn't intentional that I was going to be alone exactly, or it wasn't intentional I wasn't going to be speaking to anyone for a week. But in fact, that's what happened. And it was the first time in my life where I spent that much time completely alone, and that much time without any conversations, interacting with anybody else. And as the days went along, I noticed that I became more and more acutely aware of my environment around me, and I had a sense that the things that I saw were starting to glisten, shine. It was quite something to kind of stood out and highlight and shine and everything. And also I became acutely aware of my own thinking, much more than I had before. I'd never been on a meditation retreat before or done much meditation. And I became very aware of my own thoughts, what was going on here. And I became very aware of silence, of a certain kind of silence, silence of conversation, not talking, silence of not being able to talk to someone because no one was there. And though I did talk to my girlfriends, my five cows. And by the end of the week, I felt like I'd never been more intimate with myself and with kind of the world than that during that week. And it was a very valuable reference point for me. It showed me a possibility of how to live and how to be present that I had not experienced before. my friends came back, and then I lost that intimacy. It kind of like disappeared, shattered, to some degree. And then I made it my spirit, my task, not to go find some place to be a hermit, but rather, because that didn't seem to be in the cards, but rather my task was how to have that sense of solitude together with other people. How to have that intimacy, that presence, that stability, that peace with other people. Because what I noticed is when I got involved with other people, that my mind got more complicated. My thinking got more complicated. I was concerned then about, you know, how I was relating to them, what they were thinking about me, were they liking me, not liking me, was I living up to some expectation, did I have just the right rejoinder to their statements so that I'd appear good, or, you know, or what they just said now a little bit insulting, or, and do I need to now take that into account and say something back or defend myself, or, you know, are they okay? Do I need to take care of them in some way? There's a kind of a multitude of ways in which my mind would get busy and caught up in these concerns. And what I noticed was that these concerns often enough became incessant. Kind of like that's where I had lived. That's what my mind was doing, was concerned with all these things. And it can be so bad for some of us that we are so distracted by our distractions, we don't know we're distracted. So for me, those 7 days on that farm was kind of the first day that I kind of, first time in my life where in some ways I stopped being distracted, stopped being caught up in thoughts and ideas and concerns. So here was an experience of silence, and silence connected to solitude. And so in my previous talks, I would say that that capacity for solitude or silence, stillness, was a great support for being able to be a listener, to listen to someone. And one of the things I do is I teach a Buddhist chaplaincy training course, training people to become Buddhist chaplains in places like hospitals and prisons. And generally, people who work as chaplains work in situations of distress. People usually don't need to talk to a hospital chaplain unless they're in the hospital in some kind of distress, sometimes in crisis. And sometimes the crisis is quite acute. Some great tragedy has befallen someone. So one of the requirements, I feel, for someone to go through our training is to have sat a number of silent meditation retreats. Because two things happen in a silent retreat. One is the person gets to meet themselves in a deep way. When we're distracted and involved in conversations in life and all things we do, we're often distracted from ourselves. But if you spend a week, 10 days in silence on a retreat, even though you're around people, so you're not solitary in a sense, you're still the normal kind of social self that comes into play as you're involved in the conversation doesn't get fulfilled. And in that silence, over time, even if you didn't meditate, there's a greater and greater understanding or intimacy or familiarity with yourself. What motivates you, what your feelings are, what the common patterns of your mind are, a whole bunch of things. It becomes really obvious. And that's really important for someone who's a chaplain to see. Because if you come into the room with someone who's going through some tragedy, it's very important the chaplain doesn't express or spill over their own unexamined feelings, reactions, and mess up the whole situation. We had one person, the first year we did the training, who in fact had gone through a war as a child, kind of grew up in a war place and was kind of traumatized by that. And for some reason, part of his chaplaincy work or her chaplaincy work was to go visit people in the nursing homes who had also gone through the same war. And she came back to me one day and said, "Oh, you know, I was talking to one of the patients there, and the patient said to me, 'You're the chaplain, right? I feel like I'm taking care of you.'" Because it was actually the trauma was so close and was unresolved and dealt with that actually, she would get upset talking about it. So there has to be that familiarity. But also, there's a second thing that happens on retreats that supports these chaplains, is they learn, they find, hopefully, or hopefully touch, there's no guarantee, but hopefully in the context of silent retreat, touch a deeper and deeper stillness and silence inside themselves. And it's not easy to go deep into one's inner silence, stillness, peace, because it's almost like there's layers, like of an onion, of reactivity, feelings, history, that you have to kind of work through. Activity of the mind, you have to work through and settle in order to touch into these deeper wellsprings of stillness or silence. But as people develop a capacity for being still and silent and comfortable there as well, that's one of the great gifts you can give someone else in tragedy. That somebody's going through some major disruption, struggles, conflict, fear, whatever. And to be able to hold that, hold a space of silence, be a witness for them, kind of be a person for whom, not that it's okay that they're going through a tragedy, but it's they can be with someone who it's okay to be, they're okay with being with you. And they can be still and quiet. They don't have to fix it. They don't have to make it go away. They're not going to cower from it. They're not going to be distressed themselves. But they can kind of touch into a deep wellspring of stillness or silence inside. And as they stay there still and silent, it can be sometimes very, very helpful for the patient to feel that, to hold that. So silence is a capacity that comes from a profound connection with ourselves and in a Buddhist situation, you know, connection with our spirituality. And so I want to read a tale. And about a monk named Venerable Muni. Now, it's a little bit of a pun in the name because, you know, Buddha was sometimes commonly called Shakyamuni. Shakyamuni. And Shakya was his clan name, the clan that he, Shakya clan. And Muni, usually translated as the sage. So he's a sage of the Shakya clan. Makes some sense, right? He's a sage. But Muni comes from a Sanskrit or Indian word, I think it's Mauna, something like that, Muni, which means silence. And there was some very strong association in ancient India with sages and silence. Maybe sages were those who kept silent, something. So he's the silent, the sage of the Shakyas, but he's the silent Shakya. You know, I've read, I don't know if it's true, but I read a commentary about this Sanskrit word. And the suggestion was that in Sanskrit it has other meanings besides just silence. It's broader in meaning. It's kind of a peaceful calm or a peaceful silence or a delightful silence. Some kind of warm associations with it that are built into it. Maybe that... Anyway, so Venerable Muni always appeared peaceful. This was not so unusual among the monks of the monastery. Venerable Muni was unique, however, in that he remained peaceful and calm even after entering the busy and noisy bustle of the town market. He was the monastery shopper who, on most days, spent hours bargaining for the best prices for the produce he bought for the monks. When asked how he managed to remain peaceful, he said, "I entered the monastery looking for peace and quiet. I had spent years in the harried world of commerce and people. I longed for the silence the monastery was rumored to have. I was delighted with my first weeks in the monastery. However, as I settled into the silence of the place, I was shocked to learn that the real noise was within me. It was the busyness of my own mind that oppressed me, not the activities of the world. Now it doesn't matter where I go, I carry the great silence within me." So part of meditation practice is to meet the busyness in our own minds, to meet the agitation, the activity, and to begin understanding that there are other ways of living, other ways of living with our mind, where our mind doesn't always have to be busy, or our mind always doesn't have to live in its thinking, live in what it's saying to itself, the inner talk. And I think for people who, many people who don't meditate, that's a very new idea. Many people, there's kind of an unexamined aspect to their life where they never really thought about their thinking, never thought about where their attention tends to reside. My attention? I pay attention to what's going on around me, and I pay attention to TV, and pay attention to a lot of different things. But what's not noticed is that the very act of paying attention is, for many people, is through the filter of their thinking. They're thinking about things all the time and understanding things through the filter of their thoughts. And it's very hard to see sometimes how much that's the case unless you get still and quiet like in meditation. So sometimes in meditation, or in certain places in life where things get quiet enough and still enough, it's possible to discover little gaps between your thoughts. So you're not always thinking. And one of the very interesting questions is, who are you when you don't have a thought to tell you? So, if someone asks, who are you? You would think of something. I'm a man, a woman, this and that. And we say it through the vehicle of our words. But if we don't use words, don't use thoughts to tell ourselves who we are, then who are we? If we don't have words to tell ourselves, we don't just simply poof disappear, right? We're not dependent on the words to be alive and exist. So in the space between the thoughts is one of those places to discover some different way of being with ourselves, some different sense of who we are. Some people talk about feeling, in silence, feeling fullness. And in the busy noise of the mind, feeling diminished, actually feeling kind of flat or two-dimensional. So in this space, and sometimes that space can seem quite broad and it's expansive, and it can be really a delight. Or for people who depend on their thinking for their sense of self, it can be frightening sometimes to encounter stillness and silence. And then, the mind can still think, and we're aware of the gaps between our thoughts. We still think merrily along, but thinking is only one small corner of what's happening in the present moment. We aren't just thinking. There's a fullness of awareness, there's a fullness of presence, there's a fullness of other ways of relating to the world. That's in addition to our thinking. And thinking can be still have its place, but it's not so important. There's something more important, greater sense of well-being that can be there. So to understand an alternative to thinking or to speaking as a way of perceiving and sensing and being in the world, I think is a great, great, great thing to discover. As we get comfortable with that, then sometimes that becomes a capacity that we bring into play in our negotiations with the world. So, for example, in conversation, are you comfortable with silence in your conversations? And some people are not, and so they rush to fill the silence with whatever. You say something, because then you feel connected, you're acknowledging the person feels heard, or all kinds of reasons why we want to kind of say. Sometimes we want to interrupt. Sometimes I've noticed in myself, as embarrassing it is to admit it, that sometimes I've stopped listening to the person because I'm involved in what I'm going to say. And the tragedy of that is maybe the person is going to say what I'm going to say. Even though I don't know what they just said because if it's and so hopefully it doesn't happen to many of you or any of you. I'd like to believe I'm the only one. spare you from that. And so, but make some space in silence in the conversation. There's two very important things that can happen. One is in the silence, you might discover some deeper understanding or feelings that are relevant than you could have if you rushed into speech. And the other person has a chance to connect to something deeper, find out what's going on. So silence can be very rich. Pauses can be very beneficial. And I can't tell you how many times, as a teacher, I've listened to people for interviews and was convinced that I knew what I had to tell this person. I knew what was right. You know, I should tell, you know, something. But I've learned, you know, often enough, I don't know often enough, but often, to pause and wait and maybe ask some more questions or kind of wait and see what comes out of the person I'm meeting with. And then I'm delightfully surprised that some greater wisdom comes out of them than that wisdom that I had. And so if I had rushed in with my explanation, my teaching, whatever, then that deeper wisdom couldn't have bubbled up out of that person. So I hope that all of you had some experience of pauses and silence to allow some deeper reflection to happen, or deeper connection to some deeper values that maybe aren't on the forefront of your mind, but you know, if you are quiet, you can connect to. This is also true, I feel, in relationship to oneself, is that to spend some time doing nothing, some time in silence, where the mind is not actively having to do something or actively needing to think about something. And just be silent, sit and have a cup of tea and be very quiet. And different kind of silence than meditation, because meditation, there's often a kind of letting go of thoughts, but have a deeper silence that allows some percolation of new ideas, new thoughts, new reflections to come up. I think it's a very, very valuable part of life. And I do it often for myself, and sometimes it's a chance for creative thinking of new things. Sometimes it's space where some of the things which are a little bit unresolved in my life has a chance to bubble up. And I go, oh, you know, I need to address that. I need to take care of that. Or sometimes I get new understandings of something in that space, that giving myself space and time to let something bubble up. There's been times when I've thought something like, you know, I think I need more wise understanding, so I think I'll rush to one of my books. And then I haven't rushed my books, and just gone for a walk or made space, and then somehow some understanding bubbles up, appears. And again, it's like, you know, if you know, it's something maybe better than some wisdom that comes from a book, because it comes from my own process, it comes from my own engagement in it. And I think becoming our own teachers, becoming our own reservoir of wisdom, is really the purpose of this practice overall. It's not about acquiring wisdom and then kind of applying it everywhere, but about learning how to just kind of let it awaken it from inside of us, so that in all the different circumstances of our life, we have the capacity to reflect, contemplate, feel, tap into something, some deeper sources of wisdom and understanding to live our life from. The process of finding satisfying silence and stillness is not always an easy process, because of these layers of unresolved stuff that we have to sometimes confront. And I've known people who have closed their eyes, been silent for the first time in their life, and like in a meditation place like this, And what they discovered was instantly was so difficult, so much energy and so much emotions and feelings, that they got up and left. They just couldn't handle it. Because they never had, you know, they're always distracted, they're always engaged and kind of doing something to stop. And some people, it takes a while to discover some place that makes it hard to continue a process of inner peace. But it's really a worthwhile process. It's really a great thing. And I hope that all of us can deepen our capacity for stillness and silence so that we can all be chaplains for this world of ours that has so much tragedy. We have about, 10 minutes easily before we're scheduled to end. We could sit in silence, or we could. I'm actually curious to hear from you guys, from you, about your experiences with silence, and what can you add or build or to what I've said so far about silence from your experience.
You're talking about silence in that. I'm understanding you're referring to silence in a narrow sense of not communicating, not talking. Do you treat activities and preoccupations that keep a person busy the same way you treat silence? Let's say I can imagine a person playing video games or watching television or something like that. Do you treat that the same as silence, or do you see that as something different?
You mean if someone is silent and they're not having conversation and but they're filling their days with just video games and all that.
Yes.
I wouldn't think of that as being high quality silence.
Obviously not. Did you think of the same thing as the need to communicate? I mean, referring for the people who keep themselves busy with talking and such. Is that the same? You treat that as the same thing?
Yes. Yeah, so some people keep themselves very busy and distracted by those kinds of activities, games, video games, television, sometimes novels, sometimes recreational activities, sometimes sports, sometimes helping other people. You know, as a way of kind of not facing and staying busy. And
I wanted to sort of follow up on what the gentleman just said. I've observed in my 15-year-old son that when he is playing video games, he is, in some sense, totally immersed in them. And I'm wondering if the reason he enjoys it is because, in some sense, when he gets immersed in that level, it's analogous to what you were referring when you have these moments where, between thoughts, where, you know, your sense of self essentially isn't there because you're not thinking. Although, in some sense, it's the converse. It's the focus of the mind has been transferred in this external activity, but in some sense, the reason it's so powerful, in some sense, has an analogy to when you are not thinking about yourself, right, and then you get this level of calmness.
It can be that way. So all the things I listed before can also be avenues for people to deeper stillness, to step outside of the normal thinking mind. And it's very, people really need some way to step out of living in their thinking mind. So anything that gets you concentrated can do that. So if you get really concentrated on your video game, I can imagine it kind of clears out the mind. It can clear out the mind sometimes. So I remember when I was in college, I would take exams end of the quarter, and I got to love taking exams. Not that I was particularly good at it, in terms of getting the right answers, But I would spend, a few days before the exam kind of just cramming for the exam, so it was a lot of focus. And it was a little bit charged event to take an exam. And so all my attention would go into doing the exam. Everything else would drop away. And when I left the exam room, I would go out and I'd feel all this silence. this beautiful silent peacefulness. I just felt so good. And so I can imagine, maybe hopefully it's that way for your son. Yes, here, in front.
I just want to share my own experience with silence. When I am in silence, I feel much more tender. I feel there's a heart-opening experience, sort of like a meltdown and much more self-interest in what I'm doing. And also an element of inspiration.
Mm.
From the heart.
Beautiful.
That's my experience.
Beautiful. Thank you.
I'm David, and I appreciate your excellent words about the novice that begins a silent retreat and has trouble going through the layers. And I, however, picked up an implication or an overtone of aloneness. And I know I can't do that stuff alone. So could you say something about the interview during retreats in which, an interview with the teacher during which the silence can be broken?
Mm-hmm. Not sure how to respond, but the... I think it's very valuable to be on retreat in a community. So we're in silence in a community. And there's a kind of very great support that happens there in the silence. And there can also be many people find a kind of particular wonderful intimacy with other people in a 10-day retreat where you don't talk to the people near you. You get to know them in a way that you wouldn't get to know them if you talked. And so it can be very supportive to feel that. And it's true that silent retreats we teach, there is some conversation. The most common one is the interview that happens with the teacher. It's built into the schedule. And the other is, it's not conversations, but there's usually a Dharma talk once a day that people listen to. And then there's a little bit of work connected to, talking connected to work. People have usually half an hour, 45 minutes, a little chore that they do. And so there's sometimes a little talking around that. So, and part of the, I mean, the primary function of the interview with the teacher is to support the retreatant, to help them with the, be supportive. And there's many, many ways in which an interview can be supportive. Sometimes people are having some challenge, some difficulty. Sometimes the difficulty is with meditation itself, and so they need some kind of clarification of instructions. Sometimes the difficulty is psychological, their own inner emotional process that needs to be addressed in some way. Sometimes it has to do with interpersonal things, that that sometimes interpersonal difficulties outside of the retreat are so big that in order to for the retreat to unfold, that has to be addressed. Sometimes there's not any difficulty, particularly on the retreat, but the retreatant will come and mention, give a check in with what's going on, and then the teacher perhaps can point a person in a useful direction, how the practice can keep developing and going further. So it's not always about a problem, so you talk to interview. And sometimes the interviews, occasionally someone will come into an interview and they're so immersed in a kind of a meditative stillness, silence, that it's not really, they don't really want to talk. It's not really appropriate to talk. And sometimes I'll just say, you know, and they feel like they have to. So I've said, oh no, you don't have to talk. And sometimes it's very wonderful to sit together for a few minutes in silence. And just because it's so palpable sometimes, this stillness, the silence that someone can, when they're really kind of concentrated or still. And it's nice to share it with someone, to feel like somehow someone understands it, who can share in it, someone who can share some kind of communication that can happen in that silence and stillness rather than filling it with words. So I don't know, is that adequate, or do you want to ask again or different question? Okay. Here, Bill?
My name's Bill. I sometimes feel that I get too quiet. I've always been able to concentrate very readily, and I find myself frequently sitting in the state where I can feel the thoughts coming up before they form into anything that's recognizable as a thought, and I feel like I cut them off. So there's this big sea of, well, it's like bubbles. They're like bubbles, but they don't form into ideas. They're just, oh, the bubbles are coming.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, in meditation, that's a beautiful thing. I mean, it's in meditation practice generally, I would take that as a good sign. And you're getting concentrated and very still and present, and mindfulness is strong. And it's also kind of a footnote on this. It's really fascinating to watch, like a bubble, watch a thought begin to arise in the mind. You can really clear, it's really clear a thought's about to happen. But if you're really mindful and present for it, that thought kind of evaporates. And you'll never know what you were going to think. So what's fascinating about that is that is the source of your thoughts not in that conscious realm. And what is that? What realm of the mind are thoughts coming out of and being produced if it's not conscious? So I don't have an answer, but I just find it fascinating.
Mm-hmm. The question is more of, I sometimes feel like I'm shutting all of this out, that there might be something in there of importance, and I feel like it's... So like I put a lid on the pot.
Yeah. So it could be. It's common enough that people have some kind of suppression or resistance or holding back of things. And so there's a few things you can do. One is whatever feeling you have that's the case, you want to investigate that feeling more fully. Kind of open, spend time with it. Look at it. Is there actually a physical sense of resistance or holding or tightness somewhere in your system? Is there some emotion connected to it? Is there some fear or aversion or, you know, what's going on? And sometimes by investigating more thoroughly, the very feeling of there's a lid on it can reveal what's going on. That's one way. The other way is to find some way to let these bubbles come to maturity. And maybe if you have a habit of meditation of getting there and not things don't bubble up, maybe some other process besides meditation is useful. Maybe there's some kind of like a meditative walk. You go for a walk in the hills here. And maybe in that walk, you can kind of let these things deeper, these make some space where these thoughts could come to fruition and show themselves. Sometimes stream of consciousness writing can allow something to come forth that maybe otherwise wouldn't come forth. Just keep writing and writing and writing, just what comes up and see what happens. Sometimes stream of consciousness talking, like with a friend or a therapist, can sometimes allow things to happen. I'm sure there's more things to be said, but it's an important issue, especially if you feel like something's being held down. Okay, maybe one more here.
To mention that there is a very wonderful practice that does exactly what you were talking about, and it's called focusing. And you can find a book called Focusing by Eugene Genlin. There's a website and so on, and it's exactly that. And the idea is that that what you were talking about that might not be conscious is really that our body holds complete knowledge of our entire situation, and focusing is a way of paying attention to that and letting those things bubble up and let them bring a life forward direction for
Beautiful.
Us.
Beautiful. Yeah. So.
It really fits. It fits wonderfully with Buddhist meditation. There are a lot of people who combine the two practices.
Yes. Thank you. So thank you all, and thank you for sitting here with us in silence this morning and listening to my talk. I appreciate it, and I hope that maybe this week, as you go along, you could explore this topic of silence. Both experientially, look for opportunities of silence, look for the values, valuable silences of the day, make more room for silence, see what happens if you do that. And also talk to some of your friends about their good and bad experiences with silence. So thank you all.